As he was coming out of the anesthesia, they put him under anesthesia again. So they could remove the blood and they wouldn't like have a problem. And at the end, when he came out of the second anesthesia thing, he remarked two things. He felt some pain, and there was a sense that no time had passed, although it had been about almost a full day, almost 24 hours. I don't know if anybody else has had. I've had some kind of little procedures when you get older, you're supposed to do this one and that one to make sure everything's okay. And I remember, you know, they had to start at 10 and count back. And I remember getting to 8. Then I don't remember anything after that. And then I woke up and I looked around saying, you know, when are they going to take me in to do this procedure? Then I looked at the clock. And an hour and a half, 2 hours had passed, whatever that was. In Susupti state, the point I want to make here is time acts differently. And then in sleep, time acts differently. In awake, time acts differently. So when the living entities are within the body of Mahavishnu in their Susupti state, time is suspended. Because time is suspended, the karma of the living entities is suspended. Because you need time to move and agitate karma. You can't have fun without time. Or try to, anyway. Pursue a prudent activity without time. And that's an energy of Krishna. So, in this previous verse, because living entities have been injected into the field of material energy along with kala, or time, and it's a little detail, but according to Sri Brahma Samhita, read it carefully, and Bhaktisiddhanta explains, there are some potencies of kala. Those of you who would like to take notes can write them down. One is Kriya Shakti, the force of activity, and another is Icha Shakti, that's the will of the Supreme Lord, or in this case, because he wills, Rama Devi assists him in it and becomes her will because she's carrying out his will, but behind her will is his will. So Icha Shakti. And there's one other, but these are the two that are mentioned. Jnana Bhava Kriya, Prasya Shaktir Vipadaya Kshri Vite, you know this verse? So Bhavati Jnana Bhava Kriya Cha. The Supreme Lord has unlimited potency. This is an Upanishad verse. Prasya Shaktir Vipadaya Kshri Vite, so Bhavati Jnana Bhava Kriya Cha. So, Kriya and Bhava, or the Lord's strength, says he doesn't have to do anything. He just wills, and boom, there's Bhava. And then there's intelligence, jnana, or knowledge. In any case, that's a little more detailed than necessary. The living entities have now contacted Pradhan. Mahatattva has manifested. In the verse, if you recall, the seeds or the living entities, and the Sanskrit word is virium, literally translated, it can mean semen, so it's the impregnation of the womb of material energy by the Lord's glands. And so things start to happen. And then Mahatattva, the elements differentiate out. The detail is not given here because it's previously given. But the first element is false ego, our dear friend. Then false ego starts to mix with the modes of nature, because within pradana, the modes of nature are there as karma is there, but they're dormant because time has been withdrawn. That's how dissolution takes place. But now, for creation, time is there. So things start to happen. False ego mixes with the mode of goodness, producing the material mind. False ego mixes with passion, the mode of passion. Material intelligence, which you need in order to fulfill desires. Material intelligence is manifest. Then the really active one is false ego mixing with the mode of ignorance. Boy, all kinds of things happen. The five gross elements, and then the five knowledge acquiring senses, five working senses, five objects of the senses. There's 20 over there. 5, 5, 5, and 5. So now we have false ego. You'll count them, it's going to be 23. Because I'm going through this because today's verse is 24. There's 24 elements. So 5 plus 5 plus 5 plus 5 is 20. And then there's false ego, material mind, and material intelligence. That makes 23. So, text 20 is number 24. Consciousness. And we're going to hear, and this is a preview, we're going to hear about uncontaminated consciousness and then contaminated consciousness. And it's very important also that you remember what we discussed yesterday about the living entity. Here is called Virayam, or it's the Lord's superior potency, Para. Shakti. Para Shakti. So there's two kinds of Para Shakti, his internal potency and living entity, his marginal potency, but they're both Para, isn't it? Says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7. There's eight separated, and there's the operating Tastranya Prakritimidhi name. Para Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho. Again, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna directly says, chapter 7, living entity is this Parashakti. Same as here. So it's by the contact of that Parashakti that we're going to hear. Well, it's why the Mahatattva glows. And by the touch of, so it's by the touch of spirit, matter, by the touch of spirit and time, matter moves. Withdraw spirit and time, matter becomes inert. Pradhan, darkness. So that's just to help you understand what's coming up. So here's text 20. Thus, after manifesting variegatedness, the effulgent Mahatattva, which contains all the universes within itself, you know, subtly, you haven't manifested yet. Remember the message that the seeds, they're also called golden in the Brahma Samhita. Golden seeds are within the pores of the body of Mahavishnu. And he exhales and they enter into the Mahatattva, and the elements cling to those golden seeds and they enlarge. So the potential for universes, as well as all other varieties of things, the potential is within the womb. It's a certain causal factor. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela Chapter 1. You'll get the postgraduate study of this one. Upadhammaya and Pradhammaya and Nimittamaya is like, it's very technical. But the potential causal features are here. It's just waiting to happen. And what he's waiting for is the plan of the Lord and his influence that carries out the plan. Is Icha Shakti. So, it says, thus, after manifesting very engagedness, the effulgent Mahatattva, which contains the universes within itself, which is the root of all cosmic manifestations, and which is not destroyed at the time of annihilation, swallows the darkness that covered the effulgence at the time of dissolution. So what does that mean? Prabhupada's personal explains. Since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ever-existing, all-visible and full of knowledge, his different energies are also ever-existing in the dormant stage. So Krishna is eternal, and his energies are co-eternal, as eternal as he is, equally eternal. There's some difference, obviously. One of them is Krishna is unchanging and matter is changing. Ever changing, always in a state of flux. Well, at least in the manifest stage, and then the dormant stage is dormant because time is superior energy that has been withdrawn by his will. And then by his will, they're again in contact with matter, then things, because of the ever changingness feature. But they're eternal. That's the point. Even in the dormant stage. Thus, when the Mahatattva was created, it manifested the material ego, remember sequentially the first thing, false ego, and swallowed up the darkness which covered the cosmic manifestation at the time of dissolution. This idea can be further explained. And thus, a person at night, so this isn't susupti, it's another state of consciousness, sleep. So the three are, they are subdivisions, but awake, sleep, and deep sleep. So we experience regularly, sleep, awake. So a person at night means inactive, covered by the darkness of night. But when we awaken in the morning, when he is awakened in the morning, the covering of night, metaphorically, or the forgetfulness of the sleeping state, disappears. Consciousness goes from this condition to that condition, and then the darkness of, as with the rising of the sun, the darkness of night is dispelled, so similarly the forgetfulness in sleep is changed to consciousness, awakened state of consciousness. Similarly, when Mahatattva appears after the night of dissolution, the effulgence is manifested to exhibit the variegatedness of this material world. Where does the effulgence come from? Comes from the presence of the soul. I've been studying Brahma Samhita a lot, so I'm going to share some Brahma Samhita stuff. In one of the Govinda prayers, there's a set of four verses, a subsection in the Govinda prayers, which the theme of that subsection is Govinda or Krishna. Is the basis of everything. It's the basis of the avatars. There's one verse like that. He's the basis of matter. He's the basis of Brahman, of the Brahmajyoti. You're familiar with that verse. So in the verse itself, it says Krishna is the source of that. Krishna's body is the source of that Brahmajyoti. Commentary in Bhaktisiddhanta's very special language, he says that effulgence comes from the boundary walls of Vaikuntha realm. You know what boundary walls are? I don't ever heard of boundary walls of Vaikuntha realm, but it's his language. The boundary walls of the Vaikuntha realm. In some other places, the Vaikuntha planets themselves are said to be the source of the Brahmajyoti in the spiritual sky. There's other references that say the jewels decorating the bodies of the residents of Vaikuntha is the source of the Brahmajyoti. So, add all that together, and it means everything of the spiritual world is effulgent. This one's right and that one's wrong or something. It's different ways of seeing. Take the bigger picture. The whole of the spiritual world is effulgent, as the living entity is also effulgent. And we have seen, all of us have seen, when someone is in really bad consciousness, their face becomes blackened. When they're in very happy, jubilant Krishna consciousness, they become lustrous. Prabhupada tells the story of when he was riding on a plane, a priest came and sat next to him and said, "Swamiji, how do you do it?" He said, "All of your young followers, they're all lustrous, brilliant, shining, effulgent." Prabhupada commented on that. And it's true. We often experience. But to speak of when somebody, when the soul leaves the body. Now, I don't know if any of you have had the opportunity, good fortune, ill fortune, whatever, of seeing somebody that you know in a condition where the body no longer has the soul present, a dead body. And certainly luster is gone, and even the features look different. It's like, is that the same person? So, the presence of the soul in the body brings luster. The illumination of elevation of Krishna consciousness brings great effulgence, but just in the presence of the Mahatattva, there's an effulgence that then as part of the separation into the variegated state of the elements, as opposed to the darkened state of Pradhan. This is, say, technology, the cause and the effect of things. It's, as I said at the beginning of the discussion yesterday, it's sambandh again. What's the relationship between all things and their source of emanation? This is a slow motion picture or verbalization of how creation unfolds. So it's poetic language to say darkness is swallowed. Just like, you know, the darkness of night is swallowed by the rising of the sun. Darkness is dispelled by the presence of the sun, is another way to say it. But poetic language is darkness is swallowed. Well, so, similarly, when creation comes into being, there is light. The presence of Shiradakshay Vishnu within every particle of atom, the presence of the living entities, both of whom are effulgent, and then the dormant Pradhan becomes luminous, or Hiranya, Hiranmaya. It glows. And the darkness is swallowed by that. One other little thing is, in the purport, I just read it. And a person at night remains inactive, covered by the darkness of the night. But when he's awakened in the morning, the covering of the night or the forgetfulness of a sleeping state disappears. So the forgetfulness of the sleeping state, it, question, is that speaking of the living entity or is it speaking of matter? Speaking of the living entity, the matter is unconscious. But because when the living entity becomes awakened, when their consciousness raises, arises, then it's reflected similarly in terms of matter. Matter becomes animated instead of dormant. And matter becomes luminous instead of dark. Oh. But that's what's being described. It's the language of the Bhagavatam to help us get a picture of what's happening under Mahatma. Because you don't have forms of living entities yet. You don't even have Lord Brahma yet, who then takes the responsibility of providing living entities their bodies through the prajapatis. This is just like all the ingredients are being set up for Brahma to do what's called a secondary creation. Sarga, it precedes Visarga. There's 10 topics in the Bhagavatam. Looking the first verse of Canto 2, Chapter 10, it lists them. And two of them are Sarga, that's what Mahavishnu does, and Visarga, the sub-creation, which Brahma does. But Brahma hasn't appeared yet. So this is still the Sarga part. And the potential for all the universe is there. All the ingredients of creation are being set up by Mahavishnu for Brahma to do his thing. And Prakriti, so this is just the focus on this verse, is Prakriti becomes luminous by the presence of the Parashakti, the living entity, and Garbhadaksha Vishnu, Purusha, Avatar, Garbhadaksha Vishnu. So, then the next verse is the appearance of element number 24. We've spoken about 23, here comes element 24. The mode of goodness, which is clear, the clear, sober status of understanding the personality of Godhead, and which is generally called Vasudeva, or consciousness, becomes manifest in the Mahatattva. Now, a little before we can purport, there's a distinction between Sattva-guna and Shuddha-sattva, or Vishuddha-sattva. What's the distinction? Sattva-guna, from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, we know that each of the modes of nature have a mix of the other ones. When the mode of goodness is prominent, there is a recessive presence of rajas and tamas. When rajas is prominent, there is also the presence of sattva and tamas. It's never pure. And tamas, the other two are also present. Just one is predominating, and in Krishna's language, they're competing for supremacy. Sounds like material existence, right? Competing for supremacy. Even the modes do it. So living entities conducted by the modes do it. Competing for supremacy. Unless you become free from the modes. And what's that? That's transcendence. And Vishuddha-sattva, or Shuddha-sattva, is that. Those of you that like to read on Janmashtami Day the appearance of Lord Krishna from the Bhagavatam, you'll recall the impregnation of Devahuti takes place when in the Vasudeva state, the father Vasudeva receives Krishna within his mind. And then from the mind of Vasudeva, Krishna is transferred to the mind of Devaki. And then from the mind of Devaki to the womb of Devaki, the in Christianity is called Immaculate Conception. Immaculate Conception. That's a major part of Christian theology. Long before there was the Christian theology, there's the Bhagavatam that's speaking of the same. So there's Krishna appears in the mind of Vasudeva because he's in this Shuddha Sattva state. So Vasudeva appears there. And then they have a king. And then when he appears four-armed form, adult size, with all garlands and decorations, and children don't pay for that. It's a transcendental leela. It's not conception like normally happens. It's a transcendental appearance of the Supreme Lord appearing in that manner. So what's important here, I'm making that reference because the word Vasudeva is used in verse. Vasudeva Akhyam. Vasudeva Akhyam. By the name Vasudeva. That this Vasudeva state is going to appear in the Mahakatha. I'll share this little thing with you. One of my GTC responsibilities is in Chicago. So I attended this year's Rath Yatra in Chicago. And as I was moving around the crowd after the Rath Yatra festival, I was introduced to a Chinese lady, a woman, middle-aged lady, who is married to an Indian man. I've never seen that before. And as I was introduced to her, the first thing that she said, I have a question that I asked her. Why creation? That was the first question. I said, do you want to elaborate? She said, no, it's just, why is there creation? That's a nice place to start a conversation. Nice to meet you. And so there's two purposes for creation. One, giving the living entity the opportunity to try to enjoy separately from Krishna. You can't do it because there's no such thing. So you have to have illusion. You have to have Maya. But then the other part of the purpose of creation is to rectify the conditioned soul so that the conditioned soul can restore the original consciousness. Yes? That's the real purpose, the higher purpose. So here's the appearance of the Vasudeva state or Chittam, because these words, Vasudeva Akhyam, Chittam. Chittam means consciousness. Appears. Why? For the purpose of creation, of the rectification of the consciousness, the contaminated consciousness, which has another term, is mentioned in the purport. Chaitana. So like water is pure, when water contacts earth, it becomes muddy. Pure water becomes muddy. Water doesn't become muddy. Water is water. But then there's a mixture within the water that makes it muddy. It's just like bhakti. Bhakti is pure. Isn't that the definition that Rupa Goswami gives? Let's go through the definition that Rupa Goswami gives. What is bhakti? Anyadi vashita shunyam. Jnana karma adhyanavritam. Squeaky clean. No jnana, no karma. No mixture of anything. Well, what if there's a mix? What if there's some attraction for karma, good activities, or attraction for speculative knowledge? Trying to understand what's what by scratching your chin and scratching your head and figuring it out. Speculating. That's a contamination of bhakti. It doesn't belong in bhakti. So The second part is anupagini krishna anushimanam. You cultivate that. That's bhakti uttama. Bhakti is uttama bhakti. But within the previous chapter, no, the coming chapter, Kapila answers Devahuti's question. Bhakti is pure. But is it possible for bhakti to become mixed? He says yes. Bhakti is pure. But if in contact with the modes of passion and ignorance and goodness, it looks like this and this and this. But actually bhakti is pure. So we're recommended, we're enjoined to cultivate pure devotional service. Although we may not be, because we are not at that position presently. We should know what pure bhakti is, be honest about what our position is, and move towards what pure bhakti is. And there's a process to do that. But you certainly have to know what pure bhakti is in order to move there. Prabhupada said something several times as a new devotee that still resonates, which is, when you clearly define the goal, it's very easy to make steps to reach the goal. Conversely, if the goal is not well defined, it's very difficult to get there. Yes? I had a friend in college that had a little sports car. They just go for a ride. When he went for a ride, I asked him, where are you going? Would you get in that car and go for a ride? He said, I'm just going for a ride. And I said, well, you get there. Because it's like the philosophy of life is simply a journey. There is no purpose. No existentialism. There's no purpose, there's no meaning. Just exist. You can impose rules, that's okay. You don't impose rules, that's okay. There's no meaning. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 lightly, but a dream. You heard that one before? It's a nursery rhyme for kids. No meaning. But when there's a meaning and nectar devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita clearly, explicitly presents the meaning, what's the goal of life? Pure devotional service, love of God. You have to let go of some things. Once a reporter asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? Immediately he said, less than a moment. And in that less than a moment, two things. The tendency for fruitive activities, you just let go. And the tendency for speculation, you just let go. But generally people are attached to these things. So generally, it's a gradual process. But all things is less than a moment. Kadvanga Maharaj, less than a moment. Perfection. Description in the Bhagavatam. And for us, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? Well, it depends on how tightly we hold on to our material attachments. It's not just stuff, it's the tendency to find enjoyment in that which is temporary. The phrase in Sanskrit is asat Krishna. In Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses this term. The anarthas in the heart are described according to their source of emanation or their origin. Don't sit right by the door because the next person can bang you. Asat Krishna. Thirst for the impermanent. Asat means temporary. Krishna means thirst. Or hankering. Affinity for matter, trying to be the enjoyer of matter. And as much as we hold on to that affinity for enjoying matter while we're trying to make progress in bhakti, we don't progress quickly. And those that can let go of that tendency can progress through quickly. Same activity in a different consciousness. So it's, what is your intention? You know, that's something subtle. There's a behavior, you chant. And then what's your intention while chanting? That's the subtle. But that's the internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness. When you chanted your japa this morning, how much focus was there on the purpose of taking the holy name and calling the holy name is to restore my eternal love and service mood in relation to Krishna? And then the answer to that question is going to tell you how quickly you're going to progress in Krishna consciousness. Behind the activity, what's the intention? Because where intention is, that's where attention goes. And if we're inattentive while chanting, you know that's one of the 10 offenses. So if you want to remove that offense, check your intention. Because that will bring about attention. So that the, back to the verse, the potential for fulfilling the purpose of creation is right at the very beginning, even before the sub-creation takes place, before living entities get their bodies. You know, the instrument of fulfilling desire, or the instrument of fulfilling the purpose of creation, at least in the human form of life. That's the mission of the human form of life, awakening pure consciousness and removing the contamination. So here's the verse. I'll read it again. The mode of goodness which is clear, sober status of understanding the personality of Godhead, and which is generally called Vasudeva, comma, or consciousness, comma, becomes manifest in the Mahatattva. So these nice devotees have been, they missed all the other stuff. It's going to go right over there. But here we go. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Vasudeva manifestation, or the status of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called pure goodness, or Shuddha Sattva. In the Shuddha Sattva status, there is no infringement of the other qualities, namely passion and ignorance. In the Vedic literature, there is mention of the Lord's expansion as the four personalities of Godhead, Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. Here, in the reappearance of the Mahatattva, the four expansions of Godhead appear. So, within the creation is the shelter that we need to fulfill the purpose of creation. Right in the beginning. He who is seated within as Supersoul expands first as Vasudeva. Let's rewind to where we were yesterday, or the explanation of yesterday, where the golden seeds of the universes in their seed-like condition by Mahavishnu's expansion, they enter into Mahatattva. And the elements that have differentiated out, they start to cling, and the universes expand. But the elements and the presiding deities of primordial deities of those elements are unable to do their function. You know, they can't cooperate together yet. So they pray to Mahavishnu, help. Remember from yesterday. And then Mahavishnu acknowledges their prayer by expanding himself as another Purusha avatar, Shiradakshaya Vishnu, who enters within every particle of atom, along with this combining potency, which has two names, but it's the same potency, Kala, again. But and this is a specific feature of Kala, therefore there's another name, Kali. But this isn't the goddess Kali that they worship at Durga Puja time. That's the demigoddess within this universe, because there's no universe yet. It's the Lord's internal potency that's acting to assist Him in the function of creation. What's the function of creation? For living entities to get the opportunity to awaken their unlimited happiness, their potential of unlimited happiness. That's their relationship with Him. So in the unfolding of the Sarga, what Mahavishnu does and other Purusha avatars do, there's this uncontaminated consciousness factor, or Vasudeva state, and the deity, just like within the mind of Vasudeva, who is in the Vasudeva state of consciousness, Vasudeva appeared in his mind. And that's what's happening here. Exactly, in the Mahatattva. He who is seated within as Super Soul, Shirdakshay Krishna has already entered within every particle of Adam and within every living entity. He expands first as Vasudeva. That's what the verse is saying. Prabhupada's breaking it down. Paragraph. The Vasudeva state is free from infringement by material desires and is the status in which one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or the objective which is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Adbhuta. I meant to look that term up from Bhagavad Gita and I can do that in a moment. But we know from the Srina prayers, Adbhuta means wonderful. Adbhuta Srina. But it's the wonderful state of the natural consciousness of a living entity. That's the state where there's no material desires. Yay. Anyabhi Vashita Shunyam. It's the state of pure bhakti. Unmixed. But just like this other metaphor of water falling from the sky, it's distilled water. It's nature's way of distillation. And then it falls on earth and it gets muddy. Or wherever it falls, it mixes with something. Then it has to be distilled again. Consciousness, the living entity is there, but there's this that the deity of pure consciousness, Vasudeva, he appears from, as is stated here, the expansion of Super Soul. This is another feature of the Mahatattva. The Vasudeva expansion is also called Krishna consciousness. For it is free from all tinges of material passion and ignorance. This clear state of understanding helps one to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhaktyamam avijanati yavanyas chasita tata, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, only through devotional service can I be known. That's the Vasudeva state. See the connection. Same paragraph, he goes on, the Vasudeva status is also explained in Bhagavad Gita as Kshatrajna, chapter 13. Kshatra and Kshatrajna. It's Samkhya. This is Samkhya. If this is Sambandh again, what's what? Differentiating matter from spirit. So the living entity is Kshatrajna. But there's a... Okay, so... And then there's the Supreme Living Entity, who is Kshatrajna-cha. He's also the knower within everybody, but in his case, Sarva-kshetreshu. He knowers of all fields of activity. That's not us. So there's us, and there's the Kshatrajna-cha, or the Supreme Knower. That's spirit. Spirit animates matter. Without spirit, when the living entity is withdrawn and the Shirabhakshanushu expansion is withdrawn and time energy is withdrawn, everything goes back to the state of dormant, darkness. That's the previous verse. Now it's getting animated again. This Vasudeva status is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita Shatrangya, which refers to the knower of the field of activities, as well as the capital S super knower. The living being who has occupied a particular type of body knows that body, but the super knower, Vasudeva, knows not only a particular type of body, but also the field of activities of all the different varieties of bodies. In order to be situated in clear consciousness or Krishna consciousness, one must worship Vasudeva, Krishna. Vasudeva is Krishna alone. Now listen. When Krishna or Vishnu is alone, without the accompaniment of his internal energy, he is Vasudeva, of course, never alone. But it's the conception of thinking of that. So the dynamic of bhakti is by approaching Radha Krishna. So we don't worship Krishna alone, we worship Radha Krishna. But those who are worshipping Krishna alone or Vishnu alone, parentheses, he's never alone. He's always with his internal folks, you see. Just like the sun is always with the sunshine. But if one is just focusing on the sun, or one is just focusing on Vasudeva or Krishna or Vishnu, without the accompaniment of his internal potency, he is Vasudeva. When he is accompanied by his internal potency, he is called Dwarkadisha. To have clear consciousness, or Krishna consciousness, one has to worship Vasudeva. Of course, we're interested not just clear consciousness, we're interested in devotional service. So Radha, or Hara, or invoking her name as Hare, Radhe, Krishna. It is also explained in Bhagavad Gita that after many, many births, one surrenders to Vasudeva. Such a great soul is very rare. Who knows that verse? Ohunam Janunamante, Nalaman Mahaprajate, Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sasurava. Last paragraph. In order to get release from the. So this is going to be explained now after Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. The important part is the Vasudeva part. But all four are there. Why? To fulfill the purpose of creation. Because along with consciousness, the living entity, there's mind, intelligence, and false ego. There's coverings. But the good news is, there's a means to purify them. And that is summarized in the previous chapter, 25 of Kapila's teachings to Devahuti about devotional service. I really like the verse. Bhakti dissolves the subtle body. No more material mind. What a relief. But there's still thoughts. The thoughts are in relation to how to serve Krishna. No more material intelligence, chasing the carrot program. Get that degree, get that job, work like a donkey, and become happy. No more material intelligence. Spiritual intelligence. What's that spiritual intelligence? The Dhammi Buddhiyogam Enamam. That's just how to reach Krishna. You can still do your thing. Do your worldly duties. Don't neglect them. Krishna advises, don't neglect them. But when doing them, have your buddhi active. How this can be utilized in service to Krishna. That's the purpose of a material form of life, a human form of life. Use it properly. It's a gift. Dadami, Krishna gives it. Use it. But who does he give it to? Tesham Sipatikutanam Bhajatam Vidhi Gurukam. You got the message. But this, I'm supposed to, the job description, or the user's manual for this human body, this machine, is devotional service. Use it in devotional service. Use the mind, use the intelligence, even use the sense of identity, ego, but not the false one. So this last paragraph is how to remove the contaminations of intelligence, material intelligence, material mind. People get so harassed by their material minds, it's really sad. But it's almost unnecessary. Just purify the mind by the process mentioned here. And false ego. The procedure is also described. In order to get released from the false ego, one has to worship Sankarsana. We just worship Krishna because, according to Brahma Samhita, he's the basis and support of all the expansions. Same as the Bhagavatam. He's Param Satyam Dhimahi. What do you think to do separately? To worship Sankarsham. If you want, just want to be from false ego, worship Sankarsham. Sankarsham is also worshipped through Lord Shiva. Semicolon. The snakes which cover the body of Lord Shiva are representations of Sankarsham, and Lord Shiva is always absorbed in meditation upon Sankarsham. One who is acting a worshipper of Lord Shiva as a devotee of Sankarsham, that's like in the Rudra Sampradaya. Not, you know, the other types, people that worship Lord Shiva in some other consciousness. But in that consciousness, as the representative devotee, as the Bhagavatam says, Lord Shiva is the best of all devotees. Vaishnavanam and Tashambhu, like that. One can get released from the false material ego. His worship of Sankarsana through his representative. Just a little detour. According to Sri Brahma Samhita, who was sharing on that topic, there's a lot said about Sankarsana or Shambhu. And he's the symbolic representation of false ego. Doesn't sound good. Not only in charge of it, but he's the symbolic representation of it. So if you don't have the proper conception of who he is, you can, you know, get stuck in, not get released from false ego, but get deeper involved in false ego. But if the spiritual conception is proper, get released from false ego. Light and dark, depending upon one thing, how you regard the personality of Godhead. The message of Bhagavad Gita gives us the basics, and now here the Bhagavatam is taking us to the graduate level, from the undergraduate level. The next, it's almost done. One who is a worshipper of, if one wants to get free from mental disturbances, anyone would like to be free from mental disturbance? Yes, Maharaj. One has to worship Aniruddha. For this purpose, worship of the moon planet is also recommended in the Vedic literature. But not the moon planet just like, you know, so you can have romance. Because the moon planet is in charge of the affective or feeling side of life, phases of the moon and all of that. Similarly, to be fixed in one's intelligence, one has to worship Pradyumna, who is reached through the worship of Brahma. These matters are explained in Vedic literature. End of report. I'm just going to read the little short paragraph of Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary. Compliments of Ramaswamy's wonderful translation work. He writes, what is known as citta, that's in the verse, citta, C-I-T-T-A, that's this positive state or consciousness. What is well known as citta is composed of mahatattva. So the grammar is interesting. This means that mahatattva is present in the individual body in the form of citta. So the bodies haven't been formed yet, but it's the ingredient or the element of that is produced by the desire of the Supreme Lord as the 24th element. We're going to hear tomorrow of how that, just like rain contacting the earth becomes muddy, that pure consciousness in contact with, you know, unfortunately, the desires of the living entity or the modes of nature with which they have affinity towards, that citta becomes chetana. We're going to hear that tomorrow. But citta is there. And it's present. The potential is there in every individual body. Like right now, the potential. In its pure svacham, it is pure and devoid of passion and other symptoms. It is the place for worshipping the Supreme Lord, known as Vasudeva. Citta, ahamkara, intelligence and mind, have the deities of Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha respectively, who are worshipped for purifying these elements. Their presiding deities are Vishnu, Rudra, Brahma, and Chandra. Prabhupada has just taken that of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and presented it within his Bhaktivedanta purports. So our life is made very simple. Hare Krishna. And behind that there is some again. There's, you know, understanding what's what. And part of the what's what, part of the lens through which to understand what's what is given by feeling, process of creation. This moves that, the cause and effect of things. So when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're purifying the false ego, the mind, the intelligence. And consciousness. Consciousness is being cleansed. Jeto Dharpana Arjanam. That's our teaching. How it's the first thing that happens. Even somebody doesn't even know what's going on. We just go and, you know, in a marketplace somewhere, someplace, some public place, and chant Hare Krishna. Jayito, it's happening. Because the sound of Krishna's name is not different than Krishna. Abhidhatvam nama namidam. And just passers-by are being, their consciousness is being cleansed. Really merciful. That's Lord Chaitanya. The gift of Lord Chaitanya. And so it's not just for the public, it's also for us. We're chanting. And there, of course, there's our japa, and there's kirtan in the temple, and there's going out to the public forum. And, but it's having that effect. The Bhagavatam is teaching us what's the scriptural basis and foundation for that. Is it just sentiment? No. Is it grounded in scripture? Yes. What does scripture have to say about it? Here's what it has to say about it. So Supposing you don't know what Scripture has to say about it, will chanting be beneficial?
Yes.
Then if it's going to be beneficial, then why go through all this? But that was one of the discussions we had yesterday. Because here's what Haridas Thakur says to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Harinam Chintamani. He says that without proper sambandhi gyan, one will not get the full benefit of chanting Hare Krishna. He's not known as a great scholar. He's not like, you know, reciting Sankhya philosophy. He's reciting the holy name. And he knows Sankhya philosophy. He knows everything about the basis upon which the chanting of the holy name is effective. And it's beneficial for us also to know, and therefore the chair. So that we can get the full benefit as we go forward, not just being sentimentalists. You know, we just like, you know, people think like that about the practitioners of bhakti are these kind of, well, they just can't get it together, people. So they just do devotional things and they feel good. But, you know, they're not taking the time for deep study of spiritual teachings. Well, there's benefit even for people like that. But then amongst, especially those who have the capacity to do so, you know, the gift from Krishna to discern things, it's very helpful. Your convictions will become deeper, and then when you speak, the message will become enriched in power and potency. If you don't explain all these things to the common person, your convictions will be very, very clear. And therefore, it's in the Bhagavatam, and therefore, we're learning what the Bhagavatam has to teach about this. Help us get this sambandhi gyan picture very clear. How Krishna is the basis of everything. So as we move about and see things happening, not only can see, oh, that's an interesting display in the loaded passion. That's a really wild one of the loaded ignorance. And oh, there's a little bit of goodness over there. But underlying all of that, there's something deep and rich, but the purpose of life. So we can connect with that. And by knowing that and by living that way, we become examples for others just by our lives. We're teaching by example what's the life of bhakti. And if people ask us, well, what can you say about, you know, the teachings of bhakti? We have a lot to say about it, depending upon the person and their capacity and so many things. Okay, I'll end there and see if there's any comments or discussion. Yes?
Can you receive Lord Sankarshan by worshipping Lord Balaram?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And that's part of our Maha Mantra, isn't it?
And are three Purusha avatars also eternal? Like, they also are existing in the spiritual world?
Sure. Oh, Mahavishnu?
Mahavishnu, Balaram.
No. They're kala, portions of a plenary portion that exist here.
But are they eternal?
They're eternal, but they're not in the spiritual sky. They're expansions for the purpose of creation. They have a function in relation to matter. So like, question. When you go back to Krishna, is super soul still going to be situated within the heart, A, or B? That super soul will be before you in the form of Krishna, no longer in your heart. It's B. But when the living entity in rebellious spirit says, I'm out of here. I'm leaving. I'm going to the kingdom of Maya so I can enjoy apart from you. Prabhupada describes it like this, a little child. I'm a young adult now. I'm leaving home. And you can say yes or no, I'm leaving anyways. Please don't go. It's very difficult. No, I'm leaving. Even if you just say no. Alright. Please know that you have your home. We love you. When you return, we won't remind you that you left. And then Krishna expands as a super soul into the heart of that living entity to guide your wanderings, ultimately to bring them back to Him. And when that wonderful process of coming back to Him is complete, the spiritual form is restored and the Paramatma feature remains here. The all-pervasive Paramatma remains here, and we come before Krishna in the spiritual world. He's there just to guide us in our sojourn. Yes?
That is actually, the question is three questions. So, one by one. The first one is about origin of the jiva. Is it about the fall down of the jiva from the spiritual sky, or the jiva was eternally in the material world? Then,
do you really want to go there? What's the third one?
Second question is about ghosts.
And ghosts?
They are the living entities with the subtle body. How they get into any other body, again, having a subtle body itself. So how they...
Well, the same way, by the arrangements of karma na dhyayane trena, by superior arrangement. We have examples where ghosts, Ramanujacharya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others, release the ghosts from their condition, the reaction of their, whatever it was the cause of their becoming a ghost, by their sacred presence. There's a description in the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there was a ghost inhabiting a tree. So people used to go and make offerings to the ghost at the tree. And it was like, they were afraid if they didn't do that, they'd get haunted by the ghost or disturbed. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the magistrate in that area, and he gave a contribution to a Brahmin to sit beneath the tree and just recite aloud Srimad Bhagavatam. And the final day that the Bhagavatam was completed, it was very similar to the situation a branch broke at the top, and then the ghost spoke aloud. The people heard, said, "You've released me by this recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now I'm free from the curse of being a ghost." Just by, by superior arrangement or by interference by a great devotee. And when the term of embodiment or the condition as a ghost is completed by natural sequence or by spiritual intervention, then, by higher arrangement, then the ghost could accept another body.
The ghost is in a suffering condition.
Yes.
Then he attacks another body. So is it because he is hankering for something he attacks?
He's hankering for the instrument for fulfilling of a desire. But there's no body to do that through. And so, one who's in the mode of ignorance, either asleep or intoxicated or something, he tries to possess and then act through that body for fulfillment of unfulfilled desires. And there's a lot of anger, and so commonly there's a lot of anger, and so bad things are said and done by the person who's inhabited by the ghost. It's a miserable condition. And they're literally possessed by it, because their consciousness is dull, the consciousness of the ghost takes over the body. This ghostly haunted condition.
Third question is about is there a difference between chitta and the soul? the consciousness is different from the soul?
I can only say what I've understood Prabhupada to say, and beyond that I can't say. The soul is both conscious and consciousness. They're inseparable. Consciousness and conscious soul. Like what my understanding of it is like the sun and the sun with sunshine. You can't separate sunshine from the sun. So when you say sun, or you say that it means sunshine, when you say soul, it means conscious, the soul is conscious, and consciousness, like consciousness pervades the body by the presence of the soul. And when the soul leaves, consciousness leaves the body, because the soul leaves the body. So they're inseparable. If you try to make a distinction, this is why I'm just repeating my understanding. It doesn't go beyond this. You can't separate consciousness from the soul. And then there's this original state of consciousness, and then there's the way of restoring and sustaining that spiritual consciousness, original consciousness. That's connecting with worship or devotion to the personality of Godhead. That brings us to that restored state of inner consciousness. Now, we're going to ask something else?
Clarification.
Clarification
with the consciousness.
Go ahead.
How the consciousness gets, like, if the conscious and consciousness is the same, the soul,
yes,
then how the consciousness gets polluted, and then
by contact with, according to Kapila's teachings, by contact with the modes of nature, by affinity for enjoying within the modes of nature, that's called desire. And we have different desires colored by affinity for enjoying matter. Look in Vrishabdev's teachings of his sons. Same idea. Karma apanina shirigra bandha. As long as there is affinity for enjoying matter, mind becomes colored, and consciousness becomes colored. That the problem is the affinity for enjoying matter, not the affinity for enjoying. That's natural for the soul. But it's misplaced. It should be enjoying serving Krishna. But we're habituated to the other kind of enjoyment. So it's a struggle. And the struggle is within the mind. Because the consciousness of the soul has become weakened. So we need to strengthen the consciousness of the soul through chanting, through spiritual sound vibration. Contact with Krishna through spiritual sound vibration. And that helps slacken the affinity for matter tendency and awaken the dormant, loving service to Krishna tendency. I'm going to skip the first question.
The addition to this conscious question.
Yeah.
There are coverings of gross body, the subtle body.
Yeah.
To the soul. Subtle body includes the mind, intelligence, and ego.
Yes,
also. Is there something called as Mahatattva also covering the soul?
We're going to stay tuned for tomorrow's class, because that's where it's discussed. It's the 24th element. The short answer is yes. And it's discussed in further detail, besides in this next verse, in that same discussion. It's a whole chapter dedicated, well, the beginning part of the whole chapter is dedicated to bhakti that's mixed with the modes of nature. Anything else? Yes?
Related to the same thing, last week I had our weekly class where one person was asking a similar kind of question.
Which kind?
So, we have our weekly Bhakti Krishna classes.
Yeah.
So where one of the new persons who is coming, so he was asking in the similar lines that soul, like I was describing the soul as a pure, always a pure entity.
Yes.
So this, I was not able to give a convincing answer on how the pure soul can get into contamination.
It's the same as his first question.
Yeah, but I probably gave whatever you.
Well, here's what In Bhakti Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami, there's a long section that begins by his raising the question that you just raised. How does one come into material existence to begin with? Without the difficulty in this subject, in discussing this, I'll say it slowly. The difficulty in discussing this subject is we have a tendency to place it as an event within time, although it's not an event within time. So what's an event that's not within time? To describe it, we describe it, Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, this is the limitations of language. We describe it from within our own experience, that's events within time. So, we enter this room through that door. Well, if we want to leave, there's the door. We go out the same way we came in. So in Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami raises the question, how does material existence begin? What's the doorway so it can tell how to get out? Very logical. And he represents something to say this, that, the other thing, and refutes them. It comes up with Bahirmukhajiva. We turn our attention away from Krishna. So now comes the following question. How did that happen? Which is what your question
was.
So it's a free will choice. Now, I don't want to go into it more than that, because some acharyas speak this way, some acharyas speak that way. Our founder acharya very clearly presented as a free will choice. So I'm going to follow our founder acharya. Although there are other acharyas that may say seemingly different things, it's a free will choice. It's not an event in time. Are there such things as events that are not within time? Answer, yes. To use a little fancy language, it's not a chronological event, but an ontological event. What's that mean? Chronological means with reference to time. Ontological means with reference to being. Ontology of something is the study of being. It's an ontological event. The difficulty, one more time, is placing an ontological event as if it's a chronological event, and it isn't. It's not an event within time. But it's an event. What's the event? Turning our attention away from Krishna. I don't want to go beyond, because it keeps going infinitely. Just that far, as far as I'm prepared to go this morning. It's an event. We turned our attention away from Krishna. Anadi. Adi and Anadi. So far back, so there's one way of Anadi is eternally. And another Anadi is so far back in time, and back in time, and back in time, and back in time, so far back, you can't trace it. Prabhupada uses the second one as the meaning of anadi. Chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita, look it up. That's how he described it in the commentary. And as a follower of Srila Prabhupada, I'm going to stick with that one. Although there are other explanations that don't mean they're wrong, but I'm going to stick with Prabhupada. An event within time is so far back, an event that's so far back in time you can't trace its beginning, it's an anadi event, an ontological event. That's how. And then there's this, so it's this misuse of free will event, because we're tatastha, we're marginal. We can go this side, that side. It's mystical. It defies linear reasoning. So, the Vedic description of Tatastha is the river meets riverbank. So over here is the river, over there is the riverbank, and Tatastha is where the river meets the riverbank. Now is it river or is it bank? It's neither. It's Tatastha. And we're Tatastha. And where consciousness is directed determines contamination or shuddha, mixed or unmixed. And what's the operative factor? It's free will. As free will is there, the Supreme Lord is there, the living entity. We have it. Maybe we don't want it. Krishna, take away my free will. Don't give me a choice. It's just intrinsic to the soul. We can use it properly or misuse it. It's misuse of free will. It's an ontological event. It's quite unreasonable. Try to find a good reason for it. There is no good reason for it. It's bad. Any reason you give, it's a bad reason. But it's an event. And here we are. Now how, so what's most important, and you read that report and some of the other things, 13th chapter, what's really important is that we turn our attention to Krishna. And when we turn our attention to Krishna, Prabhupada writes, then we can understand this ontological event. Until then, we're scratching our head, pulling our chin, looking at each other saying, how did it happen? Don't waste, it's a waste of time. Because it can't be discerned that way. It can't be discerned by the ascending process. It requires connecting with Krishna in pure devotion. And Prabhupada writes, then it's understood. So I'm not going to go down the path of Yava. Yeah.
This discussion started off with the person asking the question of you say that the soul is pure, and there is, you also describe the soul as Mahatma and sometimes as Puratma. So that means the soul is actually contaminated, or the coverings of the soul, because that you say
it's the misuse of free will that's the contamination. The proper use is the shuddha part. And it's operative within the soul. It's part of our spiritual makeup as part of Krishna. So the Duratma is misuse. And the Mahatma is the proper use. And so the switch, you're the one or the zero. The operative binary event is proper use, misuse of free will. Does that help? And then, go ahead.
Actually, you said that Jiva has like marginal potency as free will, so it can go to a spiritual world. So, but Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, like whoever goes to spiritual world, he doesn't come back.
Okay, this is a circular thing. If you want to put this as an event within time, go right ahead. The Bhaktivinoda Thakur advises not to do so. And I'm not going to do it. So don't take me there. I'm not going to go there. So don't say it again and in other language. I'm not going to go there. I'm going to follow Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You can keep pondering that one. Go ahead.
You were mentioning about false ego interacting with Noah, goodness, passion, and ignorance.
Yes.
False ego, the ignorance is giving, gives rise to the 14 senses, logical senses, etc. That seems sort of logical because we forget Krishna from that. But what I'm trying to understand more is how false ego plus goodness gives us the mind and the passion gives us the ignorance.
Oh, that's easy. Ready? To build the city of Bangalore, lots of material intelligence was required. To build the universe, lots of material intelligence is required, you know, to do anything, you know, to build this computer, or build the software programs, and probably some of you do that. It takes material intelligence. That's passion. It's creating. And the mind is for contemplation. Now, the mind certainly can be influenced by material intelligence and the mode of passion. But in its reflective state, it's goodness. That's what the mind can do. But unfortunately, the mind is contemplating object of the senses over there in the tamagun side, and how to enjoy them. And then, but in order to do that, to be successful, you need material intelligence. Hey, material intelligence. Yes, sir. Reporting for duty. I've got this desire. Can you help me out? I want such and such. Oh, sure, no problem. I may have to take a few courses, but I'll get it. I'll get the job done. Count on me. I'm good. So the it's upside down. Material intelligence is the servant of the mind's desires, and even above the mind's desires is the objects of the senses. It's upside down. But one has to, the simple thing is, even if you don't understand what I just said, the simple thing is they all have to be purified. And they're purified by the principle of bhakti, which has its elements or components. And the driving force is eligibility of the candidate for devotional service is sincerity. I wish to be with Krishna again. I wish to be in my relationship with Krishna, in a loving mood, serving Him. I sincerely desire that. I mean, it could be a preliminary one that says, yikes, this is really rotten. The material program, I get up, it stinks, I want out. A liberationist mood. But as one approaches Krishna, in especially in the association of devotees of Krishna, that becomes transformed from a liberationist idea to a let me just simply serve Krishna idea through association of devotees. Or through association of those who are carrying bhakti, one becomes infected in a good sense with bhakti rather than just liberation. Bhakti, mukti, siddhi kami, sakale ashanta. The mind is ashanta. Nishkam, through devotion, one can become free from that harassment. There is a desire. That desire is concomitant with the soul. It's like consciousness is concomitant with the soul. But in a pure state, it's a desire for service to Krishna. Okay, we're 10 after 9. I'm going to end. Thank you all for coming this morning. Srila Prabhupada.